This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark. Now today we're taking a look at a subject that has been much in the limelight recently as we head into the Sabah state elections this Saturday. But there are a lot of wider questions over what Sabah's political landscape is looking like right now, as well as what is the history that has informed the interplay between political parties that we're seeing today. So to help us break some of this down, I have with me this morning Dr. Arnold Puyok, political analyst, as well as Dr. Johan Arifin, former deputy director of the Sabah Foundation. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So first of all, perhaps we can set the stage for our listeners. Now, it's been about a week and a half since campaigning has begun. Elections are this Saturday. Now, the situation is obviously very volatile and it could change. But so far, has a front runner managed to appear? Dr. Arnold, perhaps we could start with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me in the show. I just want to share with you about our findings, our survey findings. This is our first survey, which we did from the 24th till the 31st of August, based on popularity. Seems like PN and their allies are leading. But then the margin is very small, between 2 to 3%. Mm. But now we are doing our second survey. So our second survey will be expected to end on the 23rd or 24th. So then perhaps we are going to see some changes in the people's sentiment. But then again, I think Walisan, even though Walisan is like trailing behind BNPN and their allies, but it seems like Walisan has the advantage because, you see, number one, they look quite solid. They have a solid choice for chief minister. They contest under one common logo. And it seems like they are quite solid as a team to go to the election. Whereas when you look at BNPN and their allies, it seems like they are contesting against each other in at least 17 seats. Not only that, they also seems to be uncertain about the choice for CM. So I think these are the factors that are going to affect the chances of both groups in the coming election.
Now, Dr. Johan, do you agree with Arnold's sentiment that Warisan may have the advantage here?
Well, Arnold is my friend, and I don't want to sort of offend him. But
you can disagree with me.
Sometimes we need a bit of humor in this campaign. It's quite serious. Yes. Because of the global political situation, affecting the whole of Malaysia, not only just Sabah, because next election will be Sarawak. And in between, federal might call for election based on Sabah result. But the sentiments on the ground is very, very strong for Warisan, I believe. And but we cannot discount the experience and the political machinery of the BN UMNO and Bersatu, which is actually UMNO number two. So Warisan is going against an experienced bunch, but I think the sentiment on the ground is still with Warisan because people are very upset still about how this election came about. As we all know, about 32 or 33 assemblymen jumped and, under Musa's leadership. Which didn't go very well with Sabah people who believe that Warisan should have been given a full term to prove themselves. And this was cut short by this event. And one thing I noticed is that Warisan has a very, united theme in messaging. And this is, which is very good for Warisan. Whereas I think BN UMNO Bersatu still all over the place. Basically, the history is very short in terms of coming together as one team. And I think it will be a close contest towards the end. But I think for the moment, from my personal polling and all that, and talking to people on the ground, I think Warisan has a slight advantage.
I think Sabah in recent years is certainly no stranger to very close contests, indeed, when it comes to determining the state leadership. But I guess the other big question here, also looking at the Sabah state elections, is just the sheer number of parties involved in this election. So how would you categorize the position of the smaller parties here? Would you classify them as kingmakers or perhaps just as vote splitters? Arnold, perhaps let's start with you.
Yeah, they could be kingmakers in some ways, because again, I refer to our research, our data. It shows that parties like STAR and PCS, they are quite prominent. They are quite visible in areas where Pakatan Harapan is particularly weak. So I think overall, when you look at these two parties, they can play the role of a kingmaker. Mm. But then again, it depends on whether they can use their resources well, especially in areas where they have high chances of winning. Mm-hmm. I mean, for PCS, it's quite interesting because we've been covering areas like Teningau, Nabawan, Tenom. Just yesterday, I went to Matunggong. I think this, the support is there. Seems like a lot of people are curious about this party, not just because it is led by Anifa Aman, but it is because their promise to really protect Sabah, to be pro-Sabah, and to safeguard Sabah from the dominance of the federal government. So I think people are quite curious about this PCS. If they can use their resources optimally and then contest in areas where PH is not particularly strong, I think they can make a lot of difference.
Now, Dr. Johan, what are your thoughts here as well about PCS or Parti Cinta Sabah? Because I'm also aware that Dato' Sri Anifa Aman is your brother-in-law. What's your impression of their ability to tap into local sentiment versus some of the other parties where it might be perceived that the peninsula has a bigger sway in their direction should they win the Sabah state leadership?
Well, smaller parties like PCS is untested parties. This is the first time they came into this election as the new PCS, led by Dato' Anifa. So there's smaller parties like SAPP and LDP will revive leadership under Chong Ka Kiat, who's former chief minister of Sabah. A lot of people have said that these parties are Trojan horses put up by BN, UMNO people. But then that is only an accusation, but not proven. But in the context of kingmakers, even PAS has claimed, Hadi Awang has claimed that they were the kingmakers for the current PN government. So if there is a deadlock like in the last election where Warisan and UMNO BN tussle and went to court, it could happen again. So I think smaller parties eventually will become a kingmaker. If you look at Sarawak also, they are kingmakers because GBM is supporting PN. And if GBM pulls out with 18 seats today, there won't be any federal government. So I think smaller parties somehow, whether we like it or not, can be the decider, an icebreaker in such a situation. But it's something that we do not like because at the end of the day, what is the point of having an election and voting for the party in a big way? And then people with two or three seats can become the kingmaker and also form the government. And that's a big issue for all of us to consider.
Now, I know that party hopping is also another big issue that is very relevant to the Sabah state elections right now, because we did see a number of people crossing party lines in the aftermath of GE14 going back and forth. Now, the alliance lines appear to have shifted again in the run-up to these state elections. So how much will this impact voters' decisions? And I mean, on the flip side, will these defectors be successful in defending both their status as well as their reputation? Arnold, perhaps you'd like to take this first?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, we asked this question to our respondents in the first survey. And it seems like, yes, to a certain extent, this will influence their voting decision. But I think the more pressing issues for most of our respondents are issues like economy, issues like security, issues like the Malaysian Agreement 1963, particularly oil royalty, but not so much party defection. Mm. And you see, it's very interesting because if you go to places like Tenom, you go to places like Tambunan and Keningau, we ask the people whether they're going to vote for those whom we consider as party hoppers. And these people said, yes, we're going to vote for the same leader. Then we asked them again, why are you going to vote for this party hopper? So they said, because they give a good service to us. They deliver. Delivery in what ways? We are not too sure. But it seems like they like the leaders because the leaders effectively represent their voice, bring development to their areas and things like that. And if you look at Jeffrey, for instance, he is called the king of frogs. But in the last GE, he was the kingmaker. So I think there are a lot of nuances to this party defection in Sabah. And I don't think it's going to affect the voting decision of the electorates. Some, perhaps, yes, especially in the urban areas or in the semi-urban. But in the rural areas, I do not think it is a decisive issue that's going to affect the voting decision of the voters.
I'm speaking with Dr. Arnold Puyok, political analyst, as well as Dr. Johan Arifin, former deputy director of the Sabah Foundation. Up next, a closer look at MA63, as well as what a future Sabah will look like. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking with Dr. Arnold Puyok, political analyst, as well as Dr. Johan Arifin, former deputy director of the Sabah Foundation, for a closer look at Sabah politics, as well as what we can expect heading into the state elections and beyond. Now, gentlemen, what do you think it'll take for Sabah and Sarawak to get back their rightful status as partners in the Malaysian Federation, especially after the failed vote in Parliament last year to get MA63 constitutionally amended? How big are the hurdles?
These are major issues. Going forward, I think the people of Sabah are very much focused on the revenue part. And revenue is important because we need money for the development of roads, hospital, water, electricity, and so on. And it's something that federal has promised us many, many times. I mean, under PH, we were promised 20% oil royalty. We didn't get it. And even PN also promised a lot of things. Under the Malaysian Agreement 1963, we still didn't get it. So it's something that the young people are questioning the credibility of the current government.
Yeah, I think when it comes to MA63, what the Sabah and Sarawak leaders, I think in particular Sabah leaders, should do is to basically address the issue of MA63 strategically. I would use strategic because all this while they've been fighting for MA63 since 1963, during the past successive government, they've been talking about it, but it seems like we have not achieved much in terms of getting what rightly belong to Sabah. Talking about ownership is important. Talking about rights are also important. But is there any other ways where we can develop Sabah? Is there any other ways where we can fight for MA63 by just not focusing on ownership or rights for Sabah? And if you look at the Federal Constitution of Malaysia, the rights of Sabah and Sarawak are stated there very, very clearly. That is why I think the issue now is how do you implement those rights effectively so that those rights can benefit the people of Sabah? I think that's number one. That is why I think it's very important for the government to seriously consider decentralizing power from the federal to the state.
Yeah. You see, the problem with BN, AMNO and so on, every time there's an election, they come back with the same promises, okay? So Muhyiddin comes here and upset a lot of people by saying you need to be closer to the federal government if you want to get development funds. But every general election is the same theme by BN. And yet, until today, 2020, they still have not delivered what they promised us, okay, under the Malaysian Agreement 1963. I think the PH government has done a lot in moving the points forward. They came out with 21 points, 17 were agreed, 4 remaining still need to be negotiated, and those 4 are related to oil and gas, minerals, and territorial of the sea. Okay, so this campaign, BN, UMNO and Bersatu are singing the same song of a promised land, which has never happened. And you see, for it's simple, they say, oh, look, I only got 2 years, okay, and I've not proven myself. But you have been in power since what? Since 1963. And yet, we are the poorest state in Malaysia still, because the latest poverty statistics, which came out a few days ago, announced by the minister, Sabah is the poorest state with the highest poverty. Why is that? An oil-rich state like Sabah that produces the majority of oil and gas and also the biggest oil palm state in the whole of Malaysia is still backwards and is still in poverty. So there's a disconnect here which the people of Sabah cannot understand. You know, BN, UMNO, Bersatu keep promising the same thing and the same theme. Of course, there's development. Nobody can dispute that, you know, but it's something which you give to other states also. But Sabah and Sarawak are partners of Malaysia, and they should be given extra or special privilege compared to other states, because without Sabah and Sarawak, if we pull out tomorrow, there's no Malaysia, all right? Singapore's already left us in 1965. So it's something that people are really angry and pissed off.
Yeah, I always believe in the fact that, you see, if you are in the federation, it should be based on give and take. That is the reason why there is the system we call as federation. So we have the federal government, and the federal government gives certain autonomy to the state. And then in the context of Malaysia, Sabah and Sarawak have certain autonomy and have certain rights, which are clearly stated under the federal constitution of Malaysia. Well, we can keep on pursuing our rights under the federal constitution. Is there any way where we can do it strategically by working closely with the federal government? But if we are not happy in terms of how it is arranged, then we can go to the courts to fight for our rights, just like what Sarawak is doing. You see, I think compared to Sabah, I think Sarawak is fighting for MH63 more strategically. They are now forming, I think, 2 or 3 international schools using English as the medium of instruction. I think under Adnan Satem, they managed to make English as the official language for the state. They established Petros. They even brought this tax issue to the court and things like that. So, and I mean, there are many ways for Sabah to fight for MH63 within the context of the federal constitution of Malaysia. But for me, as an academician, we've been doing research on decentralization or devolution of power. So I think this is another area where the Sabah leaders can really seriously look at.
All right. And I suppose I'm also curious about how large is the sentiment that Sabah and Sarawak should perhaps be Borneo territories independent and separate from the peninsula, particularly following, you know, the multiple disappointments over the years in terms of Sabah and Sarawak being accorded their rights?
The sentiment is there, you know. The sentiment is there. Mm. Perhaps Sarawak is more guarded about their rights, but the difference between Sabah and Sarawak is that they don't stop there. They look for ways how to get what is rightly Sarawak's. Another thing that makes Sarawak in a strong position to do that is because they are able to use the Sarawak for Sarawakan sentiment so strongly under the PBB, which is a local-based party. So they can do that. Whereas in Sabah, I think we are more like, we are very fragmented politically. We are very unstable. Politics here is very, very uncertain. So there's no focus in terms of how do we fight for MH63 strategically? Because everyone is talking about MH63 here. But when it comes to sitting down together to look for strategies, how to fight for this issue, I think that's where most of the Sabah leaders have failed.
Hmm. All right. And gentlemen, just to close out our conversation this morning, I also wanted to ask you both your opinion on something that a short while ago was quite the talk of the town when Dato' Sri Shafi Abdal was put forward as a possible prime minister candidate. So how likely do you think are we to see a prime minister coming from Sabah in the near future?
Yeah, okay. This is a surprise to us also in Sabah, but it's not a surprise in any way that we always hope that one day we'll have a prime minister from Sabah or Sarawak. And we always find it very difficult to understand West Malaysian sentiments, sometimes led by PAS and Hadi Awang, who says only Malay Muslims can be prime minister of Malaysia. I mean, when Richard Malanjun was appointed as Chief Justice, he used the same thing that Richard Malanjun is a Christian and he should not be Attorney General. And that didn't go very well with Samhans. But I think the situation in KL is different now. And the people in Malaya cannot find any clear leadership that they can look up to. Okay, the current bunch of people being charged with corruption, and they got Ketutuan Melayu fanatics, and then you got religious bigots. It's very difficult for them also to look for the right leader, leadership model today. So when this idea crop up as Shafi Abdal being prime minister candidate, of course people jump to it more so in West Malaysia than in Sabah or Sarawak, okay? We got a lukewarm response, but eventually it gathered more steam and all that. And now we are talking, why not Shafi? Why not a leader, prime minister from East Malaysia for a change? Because we don't have that baggage of West Malaysia when they talk about race and religion and the same narratives, Malay, Chinese, Indian, all the time. In Sabah, we are all one family. We are united and we don't have any differences in terms of race or religion and so on. So, yes, I would think that the idea of a prime minister coming from East Malaysia is good, and I think it's gathering steam and people are now more acceptable for that idea.
Well, I think ideally that should be the case, because when people talk about Malaysia, and people look at Sabah and Sarawak. So we are a model for the Malaysian nation that we have been dreaming of achieving since independence. I think that is good. Ideally, that is good. But given the political situation in Malaysia, I do not think that's going to happen very, very soon. Because when we talk about Malaysia, we're talking about Sabah, Sarawak, different sentiment, different culture, different history. And when we go to Semenanjung Malaysia, again, the race and religious sentiments there are very, very strong. But then again, in the future, probably among the young generation, the idea that one day a prime minister would be a non-Muslim will be much stronger than today. So ideally, yes, we should be moving towards that direction. But I think currently, in the near future, I do not think that it's going to happen.
All right. Well, thank you very much to the both of you this morning for agreeing to speak with us. It's been a pleasure having you both on the show.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Dr. Arnold Puyok, political analyst, as well as Dr. Johan Arifin, former deputy director of the Sabah Foundation. This has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.